Good evening. My name is Terry Snyder. I serve as the Alaska State AARP president, and welcome to the first forum, the Borough School Board seat for District 1. I want to remind you that AARP is a sponsor of tonight's event. AARP is a nonprofit, nonpartisan member organization, and we do not have a political action committee. We do not support or oppose candidates or for public office, nor we contribute money to political parties or campaigns. Instead, AARP encourages you to learn about the candidates, and on October 4th, vote for the candidate of your choice. Tonight, you'll have the opportunity to ask the candidates questions. And we'd like for you to fill out this card, it's not going to be very cooperative, and hold it up. And when you're done, one of our volunteers will pick it up and collect it to you, and we'll give it to the moderator. And we need you to have, we need your questions. That's why we're here tonight. See, look at Sarah. She's already in front of the class. Now I'd like to introduce you to our moderator for the evening. Please welcome Lamar Anderson.
Thank you, Terry. And again, welcome to everyone. This is the candidate forum for school district number 2. We're going to hear from the unopposed candidate for district 7 as well. And just what so everyone knows, this candidate forum is being live streamed and recorded by Radio Free Palmer, FM 89.7, and we are very appreciative of Radio Free Palmer's involvement in our community and keeping the broader Valley area informed of local events. So we just wanted you to know that you are on Radio Free Palmer. Now to welcome and to introduce the candidates, please welcome in alphabetical order from District 2. First is Mr. Ray Michelson. And secondly then, we have Susan Palger. And from District 7, Dr. Donna Dearman. And her fan club. And just a review of the rules of the road for this event. Candidates, you'll have 1 minute for your opening statement and 1 minute for your closing statement. You'll also have 1 minute to answer the questions that are proposed to you. Velez Ransom and Ethel Tuck here, they are our timers tonight. They will put a yellow sign up when you have 10 seconds left, and then they will put the red sign up and ring a bell if needed when your time is up. People in the audience will be invited, as you know, to invite written questions. We have 3 initial questions that we'll ask first, and then we'll get into the audience-provided questions. And as Terry already indicated, you don't have to wait to the last minute to write your questions. As soon as you've got some questions, raise it up, and we'll pick it up, and then we can collect them, and that will just help the process. A coin was flipped prior to the event, and Mr. Michelson will make his opening statement first. Mr. Michelson.
Thank you. I assume this works okay. I just hit the button. I'd like to thank AARP for having us together tonight. It's pretty rare that 2 sitting school board members are facing off in an election, but this is a kind of a conversion year because the voters last October had decided that we would convert from at-large seats to districted seats. So we are now, Susan and I live in the same district, so that's why you see us facing off together. We're also on the same election cycle as well. So I've been in Alaska 50 plus years. Born here in the Valley, and my wife and I raised 3 children in the Valley here through our schools. And I'm running for school board. I ran for school board 3 years ago for my first term, largely because after working in juvenile justice for 25 years, I wanted to really kind of ensure that all students, no matter what their abilities, received a really good education. And that's one of the reasons I'm running for re-election. Thank you.
Mrs. Palger, your opening statement, please.
Okay. I'm Susan Palger. I'm running for school board again for my 4th term, I believe. For the last 4 years, I've been school board president. When I first got on the board, my main concerns were, of course, student education. Student learning has always been my first concern, but open finances. At the time, it was very hard to understand where the money went. It was very hard for a person to look at the finances and figure out how much we were spending. A lot of the unions had a thing with, well, they've got the money, we just, you know, it's hidden somewhere, we're just, it was so difficult for people to understand the finances. So that was one of my main objectives. I'm happy to report that our student learning, our student graduation rate has gone up, and our finances are online, and we have a very easy way to explain to people where the finances come from and where they go.
Thank you very much. Dr. Dierman.
Good evening. Thank you, AARP, for having us. I'm Donna Dierman. I live in Talkeetna, and so I represent District 7. I'm completing my first term on the Matsuburo School District School Board, and this has been a wonderful way for me to continue in a 25-year career in education. I hail from the great state of Florida, where I was a classroom teacher for 18 years and a high school administrator for 7 years. When I ran, my concerns were to have representation for our rural communities and a voice for our parents with children with special needs. And I think that I have brought something extra to the table for both of those concerns. And I'm very honored and quite fulfilled to round out a career in education being on this school board here in Alaska. And I appreciate all of those people who did not know me 3 years ago who went to the polls and took a chance with me. Thank you very, very much, and I appreciate everything. Thank you.
All right, thank you. As Mr. Michelson started with the opening statement, Mrs. Palger will answer the first question first. What would be your top priorities as a member of the Matsuburo School District Board?
Student learning is always a top priority. We have so many different ways for students to achieve now. We have homeschool, we have charter schools, we have career tech, we have a middle college. We have so many pathways that students can take to achieve as much as they can. It used to be you went to your neighborhood school, did your 4 years, and you were done. Now you can mix and match and design an education for your family or for your student. I think it's helping with student achievement and student learning.
Mr. Michelson, what would be your top priorities as a member of the Massachusetts School Board?
Well, one of the top priorities, I think, is maintaining the litany of programs that help to help us to reach, I think, our mission or live out our mission, and that is to provide education for all students, regardless of their abilities, regardless of their interests, and to maintain all of that. And I think it's especially important to really concentrate on maintaining that in the near future due to budget cuts and that at the same time that our community is growing. We talked last night at a joint assembly meeting about getting the school location committee back together to find out where, or to at least talk about where the growth is in the valley. So With the growth, with the rate that it is, the seemingly declining interest in the state government in funding schools adequately, those are things that I think right now are going to be especially important to pay attention to.
Thank you. Dr. Dierman, would you like to provide some comments?
I think that my concern would be to continue on the path that we are in. When you say Matsuburo School District, people think great school choice, great innovation, and great learning opportunities for your student, no matter what level, what they want to pursue what school they want to go to. And I think given the economic times and the future of education and the funding that's out there or not out there, so to speak, that's what we need to stay focused on. And the MATSU has a level of expectation for the students and the families, and we need to find a way to work together with the legislature and the funding sources to be able to continue to provide that high expectation and quality of education that we are known for.
All right, thank you. The next question, and this is from the audience. The greatest population growth is out KGB, and the schools there already are at capacity. What is the fix for this? Mr. Michelson.
Well, the fix isn't a quick fix. Last night, we looked at some long-range forecasting for where new schools would be built. And one of the top priorities is to add a high school to the existing Reddington junior senior high school that's out there right now. So there is a plan for expansion there. The existing building would be actually become the middle school with the high school being built onto that. There is, I believe, another elementary school plan for that particular area, but we're talking about funding, bonding for those schools, and having a lot of public input and voting on those things, much like we did with the 2010 or 2011 bond that we passed, which gave us a lot of new schools and helped us to respond to growth. So we are in another cycle of responding to growth that's going to take the community to kind of approve and the community to really want. I'm sad to say that we have portables out at Reddington right now, and it's only in its second year. So we're doing what we can to respond to that, though.
Ms. Powder.
So Mr. Michelson covered that the growth out Connect Goose Bay, we're going to have to put in new schools. That's something that is down the road. Year before last, when the state legislature figured out that they had no money, they passed a bonding hiatus for the state to pay for bonding for local schools. If you remember, Anchorage had bonded and the state came back and said, no, we're not paying 70% or 60%, which is how we've always bonded. The state's picked up that 70%, we pick up that 30%. Well, the state has decided that program's gonna go away until 2020. Then when it comes back after 2020, it may be only 50-50. So when we build new schools in the future, unless the legislature changes, it will be with local taxpayer dollars or at least more of it.
Dr. Dierman.
You see how smart this school board is? I don't really have much more to say about this. However, I will say that I wish our new school board member who will be rolling in on this cycle from District 5, which is the Kinnick Goose Bay area, all out there, we're here this evening, because that person is going to be very instrumental in what goes on in that area, because they do represent that high growth area that is now occupied by Dedina Elementary and Reddington Junior Senior High School. But yes, we have covered all of that, and that is on the plan to build new schools out there, because things are very, very rapidly growing in that area. But the school district and the borough is very sensitive to that growth, and we will see new schools, hopefully, when the time and the funding is available for them to be built out in that area.
Thank you. And while the previous question was specific to a school out at KGB, which is outside District 2, that issue with the growth in the population can occur anywhere in the school district. And this next question is really related and pertains to any board member, regardless of what district. As a school board member, what would you advocate for to raise revenue to build new schools, given the lack of state funds for the next 5 years? Mrs. Powder.
Wow, I can't really say I advocate for new taxes because I am a taxpayer here in the borough, and nobody wants new taxes. We all of a sudden have, our state is broke. The money has to come from somewhere. And what we've seen in the last legislative session is they have been passing the funding back down to boroughs and cities. We got the state backed out of, I guess I'm not supposed to say backed out of pain, but the state said that they would pay for 70% of our bonding for new schools. And 2 days before the new year started, the governor cut that and left our borough with $5.7 million to come up with 2 days before their new budget started. So what's been happening is it's been passed down to local communities. I don't know where the funding's coming from, but I can guarantee you that our school district will do the best to make good decisions and act thriftily, but still provide the best education possible for our students.
All right, thank you. Mr. Michelson.
Well, I can't help but think that this is going to be a community decision on what direction we go to fund our schools. Much of our taxpayer dollars goes directly to schools. We've got 18,828 kids as of earlier this week, which is right on projection. And I just think that with the state of the oil industry, the awakening that the legislature and the general public, I think, is going to have to start undergoing to really face the reality that I really think we're going to be living differently in the next 3 to 5 to 7 to 10 years. We've, I don't need to tell you the history of our oil income and how we've had it, but it's going to have to be a community solution to prioritize schools that we send our children to every day. And that will have to be where those decisions will have to rest. Between the school board and the assembly, though, we can work to help guide some of those community decisions.
Dr. Dearman.
I think that both Susan and Ray have brought up very excellent points. And the only thing I would add to it, I think that from the state level on down, we're just going to have to prioritize what is most important. And as Ray pointed out, things are going to look a lot different for those of us living in the state of Alaska in the next 3 to 5 years due to funding. And we're going to have to just take a good look and say what is most important for us. And education is an important part of what goes on and what we do, because without education, we don't have a tomorrow. And we have to look very hard and fast at what we do, and we have to find ways to collaboratively provide for the education of our students and all of our tomorrows.
Thank you. The next question we'll have Mr. Michelson answer first. Given the dwindling resources and the largest class sizes in the state, how do you balance the myriad of programs the district offers with controlling class size?
I think one of the tangible things about controlling class size could be dealt with unique scheduling. I know that school districts tend to be really locked into August through May type of a schedule, and can't kids take classes in the summer, throughout the summer. Not everybody goes to grandma's for, the entire summer. And maybe we could make use of those buildings and do something really creative and kind of out of the box. And I think one of the other things to really realize is with the onset of advanced technology, which the school board has made a priority of for the administration, how many kids can be in a classroom with devices that can be working on different projects? where there isn't intended to be a lot of interaction every day between the students, but learning via the device. And is that something that can be factored into an equation for class size? Online learning is real big for everybody now, whether you're a lifelong learner or whether you're a fourth grader. So it's some of those ideas that can be, I think, considered when trying to deal with class size.
Ms. Hauser.
We are already doing quite a bit of online learning in our schools, and when we looked at how many students were taking online classes and doing work at home and taking classes throughout the summer, we found it was quite a bit, and actually a lot of high schoolers are taking at least one online or one class that is on the computer at home. We can track when they log on, and they usually log on late in the evening and do their work. They're supervised by a teacher here in our school district. They're not supervised by someone outside. We have a lot of students who take a class like that, either to free up their schedule so they can take music at school or, you know, some other class that they're interested in. So I think that so far has been working pretty well for us to free up some class spaces. Of course, elementary school children usually don't do online learning. We have a lot of homeschool students who are in our school district.
Thank you very much. Dr. Dearer.
The only thing I would add to that, in addition to the online learning component, is building utilization. And we are coming up with ways to use as much of the space in our buildings that we possibly can. For example, the new ANSEP Academy that we have put into Valley Pathways, so that more of that space in that new facility is being used, opening up more opportunity for more students. And when you do that, it opens up other space in other schools because students move within the district. So I think that the school district is very creative in the way that they find more opportunities, and they find other ways to create space in these already over populated classrooms.
All right, thank you. This next question we'll ask Ms. Palger to answer first. A growing number of students in the school district are now being raised by grandparents or other family members. What can the district do to assist these families?
Students who are being raised by grandparents, I don't know what more we can do to assist them, except for that they're a family. Families look different all over our country and our district. Families, they have an adult at home, somebody to help them. I think one of the things we can do, though, is encourage those grandparents who have young children to make sure they tap into preschool opportunities, make sure they have some kind of access to early reading materials so they can get their students ready for preschool. I work at the WIC office, and I see a lot of grandparents who are raising their grandkids, and I know it's a really big challenge. It's a social issue. And I know that our teachers in our schools really, really support student learning. And I would just encourage those grandparents to get a hold of the teachers and talk to the teachers and see what they can do to help and make the teachers aware of that situation.
Thank you. Mr. Michelson.
One of the fastest growing segments of our population in MATSU are senior citizens. And with that would probably become more likely that they may end up raising their grandchildren. But the one thing I think that we need to very consciously do is to support those grandparents as much as possible in learning really about what modern education looks like, what kids are learning, but also make schools ensure that schools are accessible for the older generation as they move to and from, and involving them more in classroom activities, involving them more in the operation of the school, but to really reach out to them. But I just can't think of anything more important than making the school and education accessible to grandparents and really getting rid of some of those hurdles that they may see that we may not recognize ourselves, with parents typically being a lot younger these days with kids, it seems like, anyway, for myself. But anyway, I think accessibility is real key.
Dr. Dearmer.
I think that our schools do a very good job about including all families. And while I agree with Mr. Michelson on accessibility for an older generation and helping them understand what today's schools look like, because they certainly don't look like what they did 40 or 50 years ago. And even the subjects don't have the same titles that they did 40 or 50 years ago. I think that it is important to make whoever or whatever age that family member is to feel like they are included and part of not anything different. They are somebody's family member, they are somebody's acting parent, they are the person taking care of that child, and they need to feel very much a part of the community when they come to the school. And I think that our principals do a very good job of that because they want their students to be successful.
Thank you. Teacher shortage with fewer and fewer people are entering the teaching profession. How will you support attracting and retaining the best and the brightest teachers for our kids? Mr. Michaels.
I think one of the things I think that we can do tomorrow is establish closer relationships with the schools of education at Fairbanks and at UAA, to get those kids that go to those schools that want to pursue a career in education, to get them on a track to coming to MATSU, and to attract them to do student teaching in our schools. I think one of the other things is finding out more about the experiences of new teachers that come to our district that are fresh out of school, and surveying them and make sure that we're really finding out what that experience is like, and that we're not just putting them out there their first year of teaching, being kind of rookies for the first couple of years, and then not really paying attention to following up with some of those difficulties are. So I think those are a couple of things that we can do to attract teachers. And then there's, of course, technology and the use of technology that can be a real attractant or a deterrent sometimes to teachers in the classroom.
Thank you. Ms. Powder.
So a minute is really, really fast to answer these questions. The state did a study and found that that MATSU has had the least amount of problems attracting new teachers compared to other school districts in Alaska. I think one of the reasons for that is because we have a very generous teacher continuing education program with spring teacher classes and fall teacher classes that they can take and get their college credits through our school district. Another one of the things is that, gosh, you know, MATSU is the best place to live, you know, and I believe that the teachers here know that in general, our population supports education. In the MATSU, teachers are supported, education is supported. We're proud of our education here in MATSU, and I think that attracts teachers and keeps our teachers here.
Dr. Dearmer.
I think everything that Ms. Powser just said about the MATSU being a great place to work as an educator is spot on. But your question was, how do we get people to go into the profession of teaching? Because that's what's lagging. Is that, am I correct on that?
That was part of the question.
Okay. Yes. So the thing is, you've got to get excited people who are teachers to talk to people about becoming teachers. And I will tell you that since I was 4 years old, I knew I wanted to be a teacher. And I knew I wanted to be the best teacher in the world, and that I wanted to excite my students every single day. And I am right now 62 years old, and every time I walk into a classroom and I'm before students, all I want to do is teach them and excite them every single time I am with them. I love teaching, and the proudest thing I have ever done in my life is become a teacher. I am proud of it every day. I am proud to tell people that I am an educator. And what we need is to have people excited about being teachers again. It's not a career of yesterday. It's a career for tomorrow. So we can make our tomorrows. And we can't do that without teachers.
Thank you. This next question addresses probably both in terms of the financial resources as well as class size. Have you ever considered split years in education? Ms. Boucher.
I personally have never considered split years in education for our local school district. I know that I have a sister whose kids were on split years. It worked pretty well for her family. She had a high schooler, a middle schooler, and a grade schooler, and they somehow got them all on the same track, and they had vacation at the same time. I really haven't considered that, but that might be something that's coming up in our financial future, depending on, what the state, the finances of our state.
Mr. Michelson.
I think that's one of the myriad of creative ideas that probably could be had and could be bounced around and considered by a lot of different interested groups, teachers and parents and students and the school board, the borough assembly. But just to, like I had said earlier, answered earlier to a question about financially the forecast for us. We kind of know what the forecast is in the next couple of years, but we don't know what the future is in 5 to 10 years, kind of based on that. So I think that we're going to be living differently. We're going to be working differently. I think that we're going to be educating a little bit differently. And I think we need to be prepared to have those conversations, not just as the school board, but as the community at large, including the borough assembly members, to really grapple with these things. Because you know, no matter how beautiful Mat Su is, if we don't have good schools and students who excel in those schools, that doesn't make things that much better. That is, the students are our most valued resource, and they should really be the focal point of any of these financial discussions that we have.
Dr. Dermer.
We have a looming problem, and we know that. And I think that we there are enough people at the table who are intelligent and creative enough that we don't have to jump and have a knee-jerk reaction to it right now, but we do need to think about it. We need to look down the road, we need to look right, we need to look left, and we need to get a grasp on the situation at hand. And there are enough creative minds and enough creative ways to handle the situation. And with all of us together working on this situation, the borough, the school district, the school board, and the Alaska State Legislature, I'm sure that we can come to terms with finding ways to remedy the situation.
Thank you. We only have time for a couple more questions. What is your assessment? Do you believe there is a problem with the process by which teachers whose performance is substandard are retrained or terminated? And would you improve the process? Mr. Michelson.
Well, I think any kind of personnel processes, progressive discipline, training, retraining, and working with people deserves a lot of our attention. And specifically, in the school district with different buildings, with different principals. Having a good principal and good supervision and opportunities of professional development will keep morale high. Processes for dealing with substandard teachers or teachers that simply aren't at their best, to ensure that those processes are fair, that they're fair work processes, employment processes, but also fair in terms of the profession itself. You'll hear from time to time people complain about, well, my kid has a bad teacher, or you know, some other disparaging comment about teachers. Well, what's being done in the building to really raise them up and really challenge them to do better? And a lot of our systems need to have, I think, those very important components if we're going to retain teachers, but also if we're going to also put the very best people in front of our kids.
Thank you. Ms. Padger.
I love teachers. I think that everybody wants to do a good job. Nobody goes to work and says, gosh, I'm going to do a bad job today, or, you know, I'm really bad at this job, and keep going. I think teachers want to do a good job. So when teachers maybe aren't at their best, or maybe need some new tools to be at their best and to teach students, I think we need to provide those. I think we need to be fair, because we need to demand the best for our students. So I'm not saying that we need to let teachers slack. I'm saying that principals at the schools need to keep an eye on how students are learning, how teachers are teaching, identify those teachers that might need new tools and might need some new training. Identify those teachers and get that happening. If it doesn't happen, then you start with progressive discipline. But I really think that people want to do a good job, and we need to give them the opportunity to do that.
Dr. Dierman.
The things that make students great students are the same things that make teachers great teachers. They need to be complimented, they need to be praised, they need to be shown good direction, and they need to have good tools in their tool bag. Teaching's one of those great professions where you can just grab your little bag and walk out the door and go on to another school, another state, another city, another county, and you can pick up and teach there. And I think that oftentimes teachers feel that they're not supported. There are times when that can happen, and sometimes something might occur in a classroom, and it gets out of control. And oftentimes, yes, there can be a bad apple in the bunch, and we need to take control of that. But I think that when we do take control of those situations, they need to be learning situations for the teacher. Not to beat up on the teacher and make them feel worse. Let's use it as a learning experience for them, make them better, and put them back in the classroom, because there's something that made that individual want to be a teacher and to help children learn. So let's try to help them fix what the problem is, if it can be fixed, and if it can't, then let's move them on and get someone in the room to help those kids learn.
All right, thank you. And this will be the last question before closing comments, and it's kind of a hybrid question. I think we would all agree that community support is vital to the school district. That's what's necessary for the, you know, financing and those type of things. But with the state financial situation, which from, you know, many people's perspective places your students in a lower priority, why is it so unlikely that the board would not ask the people and businesses of the MASU to invest in its students? What new ideas do you have to increase public participation and partnering in our district? Ms. Poulter.
All right, so that's a complicated question in 1 minute. I think that our public really supports schools. You have to remember that the school board doesn't levy taxes. We ask for the money, and we ask for it from the legislature, where 75% of our money comes from. We get about 25% of our money from our local community. So when people are supporting schools, you need to support schools to the right people. You need to talk to your legislature. Talk to the people who are running for office, who have control of finances. Ask them what they think about our schools. Ask them if they support schools. When you talk to a school board member, you're kind of preaching to the choir, you know, that education needs more money. You need to talk to your local legislators. Tell them you support schools. Tell them we're in need of good schools and the finances need to be there. When you talk to your borough assembly member, let them know the same thing. Talk to the guys with the money. Your school board agrees with you. We need money.
Mr. Michelson.
Would you mind repeating that question one more time?
It's a hybrid question, but with the state, you know, finances and reducing the expenditures for education, and from many people's perspective, that's placing students in the lower priority. You know, how, why would the board be reluctant to request support from businesses and the citizens of Matsu Borough to meet the need for the education for the borough?
Well, it may be, in direct response to the latter part of the question, it may be that the asking businesses or industry to make up for the shortfall in state funding by formula might not be the wisest approach. I wouldn't want to approach business and industry out of financial need. I would want to approach business and industry in the state of Alaska through growth and opportunity and learning for students and expanding those horizons. I think one of the very tangible things that we can do with this is really more of a fix. I learned the other day that 20% of the kids who go home after school go to a home that does not have an internet connection. And the more that we try to work on getting kids connected online, assuming that they're going to have that at home, just isn't true for 20%, apparently. So what can we do as a school board, as a community, to connect industry to that problem and to try to solve that particular problem as a way of helping to support schools?
Thank you. In 1 minute, Dr. Dermott.
I will just say briefly, I know that one of our goals on the school board is to work closer with our businesses and communities. And we have already seen fruits of those asks by having, is it MEA or MTA? MEA? MTA has come in, and we have a coding academy at Wasilla Middle School now. That ask has become another learning opportunity for our students. The funding has come in from them. It is not anything that we have had to put money out for, but it has also added another learning opportunity for our students. And if you have read anything or heard anything of late, you know that coding is a big thing in the schools these days. So we have that. We have that opportunity from business that has come in. So I think that we might be a little bit ahead of the game on that, and I'm sure that there are going to be more opportunities out there that we take advantage of in the future.
Thank you. Mr. Powser, we will go with you first for your closing statement.
I'd like to thank AARP for having this. It's one of our only opportunities to talk to the public about our schools. Our schools are, I think, the best in the state. Our education and learning for our students is increasing. And we want to be able to move ahead and continue to provide that. So with your support of education and with your vote on the 4th, I would really like to continue our forward movement.
Mr. Michelson.
After having spent 3 years on the school board, I had no idea what I was in for, to be quite honest with you. learning curve is fairly steep when it comes to an extremely complex budget. And to really wrap your brain around what we have and what we're delivering to kids in all facets of our community and our schools, that I feel like I'm just at the point right now where I'm actually becoming a much better school board member here facing a potential second term. So I'm really excited about the work ahead of us actually now than I was even 3 years ago. And I think one of the added pieces of excitement here is the funding atmosphere of our schools and coupled with or put up against the tremendous growth in our borough. So I really feel like a second term for myself is going to be of that much more added value to our community through our school board. So I really hope that you'll get out and vote on October 4th. And I really, really appreciate the opportunity to answer the questions tonight. Thank you.
Dr. Dierman.
Thank you again, AARP. These were great, thoughtful questions from the public this evening. It's been great being here, especially between these two great colleagues of mine. And I just want to say, if you don't know by now, I love education and I love being on this board, and it is awesome representing the Upper Valley from Meadow Lakes up to Trapper Creek. And I really do think that we have some trying times ahead of us, but I am confident that this board is poised and ready to find answers for those problems that lie ahead of us. We have great district leadership, and the people that are on this board are ready to move forward and do what we have done for the past 3 years, and that is provide great education for the students of the Mat-Su Borough, all students in the Mat-Su Borough, not just the ones that are in each of our districts, but all students from Glacier View to Trapper Creek. And I know that we're going to get through these times, and we're going to continue to put out the best students in the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's it for our forum for the candidates for the school district 2 and 7. Coming up next will be a candidate forum for assembly district 1. And to our candidates, thank you very much for participating in this forum. And we also want to thank you for your willingness to be the person in the arena, so to speak, and to take the heat. Not everyone is willing to step forward and serve the community as any candidate has willingly done. So thank you very much, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your great questions, your attendance, and your participation. The candidates will take about 12-13 minute break. The candidates will be here, so if you've got some additional questions, mingle with them, mingle with the food, and we'll start the assembly forum here at 7 o'clock. Thank you very much.